Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Tripod Talk Radio, where we're spreading the word that it's better to hop on three legs than limp on four. Hosted by Jim and Renee and Wyatt Ray of the Tripods Blogs community at tripods.com, Jerry's place for canine amputees and their people.
Hello, and thank you for listening. This is Tripod Talk Radio, and today is Sunday, March 15th, 2015. We'll be talking about mast cell cancer, tumors, and treatment options today, and we are honored to have an expert in the field with us to answer questions. Dr. Ann Hohenhaus is a board-certified veterinary oncologist, heading up the Jacqua Transfusion Medicine Service at the Animal Medical Center in New York City. Join us now in the live Tripods chat with your questions at tripods.com/chat, and join me in welcoming Dr. Hohenhaus to the show. Thank you for joining us, Doctor.
It's so nice to be here.
Hi, Dr. Hohenhaus. This is Renee. Thanks for being here again. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here and to talk about a disease that can be very confusing. So I hope we can dispel some myths today.
I would love to, because it is one of the diseases that many of our members deal with. And, you know, it seems very mysterious, and a lot of times it seems like you're playing whack-a-mole with this disease. I mean, it just keeps coming up over and over again for some people. And so I'm hoping that you can start by explaining the basics to us. What is the difference between a mast cell and a mast cell tumor? Can you tell us?
So a mast cell is in a normal person or dog, the mast cell is an allergy cell, and it releases histamine when you're allergic to something. And so when you take an antihistamine, you're trying to combat the effects of the mast cell, which is to make your eyes runny and your nose runny and everything itchy about you. So a tumor, any tumor, is cells gone rogue that are no longer behaving the way that they're supposed to, and they form a lump of mast cells in this case, although a kidney tumor would form a lump of kidney cells on a kidney. Mast cells are common in the skin because that's often where allergies are manifest, because the mast cell is trying to protect you against things out there from coming in. And so the mast cell tumor then is just an aggregate of mast cells that are not behaving like they're supposed to. They've formed together to form a lump, usually on the skin of dogs, although occasionally we see internal mast cell tumors in dogs and a little bit more often in cats that we'll see internal mast cell tumors.
Okay. And so how is it different? Speaking of cats, how is it different between dogs and cats when it presents itself?
So nearly all dogs with mast tumors have a skin mass as their initial site of the mast cell tumor. And then occasionally they spread widely throughout the body and affect other organs. In the cat, we will often see mast cells of the intestine, the spleen. The spleen is a big one, and less commonly mast cells of the skin. And in the cat, most skin mast cells are benign, where in dogs we see a greater proportion of skin mast cells that are malignant. So they vary according to organ that is affected and where the bad mast cell tumors are. Bad in cat is internal organs. Bad in dog can be some of the skin ones.
Okay, and so when it appears on the skin in a dog, for example, on a dog's leg, how does that lead to amputation? Does the cell just kind of take over the entire leg, or what happens in that case?
Well, I'm going to take a step back and say that the most important treatment we have for mast cell tumors in dogs is to surgically remove the tumor. That's the number one best treatment that we have. Now, if the mast cell tumor is widely spread, then sometimes surgery is not possible. In a leg, sometimes the mast cell tumor creeps up the leg, and there's not a lot of skin on the leg where the skin can be removed with the mast cell tumor and still have pieces of skin to put the dog back together after surgery. So there are sometimes when amputation of the leg is the best option to get rid of the tumor via surgery. And so that would be the situation where a mast cell tumor might lead to amputation.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up. I often wondered because I know that, you know, like you said, mast cells can appear just about anywhere on the skin. But we have so many members who lost a leg to it. So thank you for clarifying that.
And it's, you know, the treatment of mast cells is like real estate. It's all about location. So what you always hope for is a nice golden retriever that has really baggy skin that you can get wide borders around the tumor. The current recommendation is 3 centimeters on all sides of the tumor and 1 tissue plane deep. You can't really go 3 centimeters deep because that would create quite a crater. But you go, you know, if it's in the skin, then you go below into the tissues underneath that to make your you can imagine that on a dog with a small leg, 3 centimeters of skin around a mast cell tumor somewhere below the knee may not be achievable without an amputation.
Okay. And that's when you say the 3 centimeters around, that's what oncologists refer to as getting clean margins. Is that correct?
No, 3 centimeters is our current best recommendation that has a high likelihood of achieving clean margins. But clean margins is something that the pathologist tells to us. So already we've got 3 specialists involved in the management of this case. First, we've got the oncologist who says this is a mast cell tumor and it needs to be surgically removed. Then we've got the surgeon who says mast cell tumors need 3 centimeter margins and a tissue plane deep. And then the pathologist gets that tumor with its accompanying skin around it, and they make special slices around the edges that the surgeon cut, and those edges are looked at under the microscope to say that they're is normal tissue between the mast cell tumor and the cut border of what was surgically removed. If the cut border on all 4 sides and on the bottom of the resected tissue is not got mast cells in it, then the pathologist says the margins are clean.
Okay, thank you. Gosh, I'm learning so much, and we've only been doing this 8 minutes. Oh, my gosh. This is fascinating. Tell me now, what does a mast cell look like? Because we suspected one was on our dog, Wyatt, and it was a very small, dark lump, like a pencil eraser. And for a minute there, you know, we thought it could be mast cell, and thankfully it wasn't. But what do they look like? And do they appear in clusters or just all alone by themselves? How do they look?
So the typical mast cell tumor is hairless. It might be pinkish. Sometimes it bleeds. If you bump it, it sometimes is itchy, so the dog will scratch at it. And because it contains histamine, which one of the properties of histamine is it causes swelling, and you know that because when you're having an allergic reaction, your eyes get swollen. That's because of the histamine release. So sometimes mast cell tumors will blow up, and then people will be all happy because the tumor shrinks down and they think it can't possibly be anything bad. And the answer is that if you have a mass that's on your dog and it gets bigger and then smaller and bigger and smaller, I would put a lot of money on a mast cell tumor as that diagnosis. Sometimes, pink, bleeding, itching, swelling that seems to resolve but never completely goes away, those would, and hairless, those would all be the typical mast cell tumor. Now, every now and then, one of these mast cell tumors just fakes you out, something terrible, because it occurs under the skin, not in the skin. So it's called a subcutaneous mast cell tumor. And those babies look exactly like a lipoma, which is a fatty, benign tumor that some dogs just are very predisposed to having. So if you have a dog that has a subcutaneous mass, it still could be a mast cell tumor, even though it will feel to your veterinarian's fingers just like it's a fatty tumor. And that's why lumps really need to be aspirated and proven to be fat or not before we decide to ignore them.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. I mean, we've come a long way from the general philosophy where a vet would tell you just wait and see to, hey, let's stick a needle in there and biopsy it really quick so we can find out what's going on. And I was going to ask you, you know, are there things that we can do to catch these tumors before they spread or get any worse? What can we do to stop it, or is there, can you even prevent it from happening in the first place?
So prevention of mast cell tumors is, I don't know. Nobody knows that mast cell tumors, what we can do to prevent them. So unfortunately, although I wish there was something so that I would never have to see one again, I don't have it right now. To diagnose mast cell tumors quickly, you can do a needle aspirate, take some cells out of the tumor. So you would do that with a syringe and needle, and instead of giving an injection, you would suck back with the needle inside the tumor. And then the veterinarian squirts that few drops of cells onto a microscope. Mast cells are usually very easy to recognize because they're big round cells, and they've got purple little granules in them all over the place. So they're quite characteristic under the microscope, and many veterinarians are comfortable deciding it's a mast cell tumor on their own without a pathologist input. So that cytology is critical because, remember I said that when the surgeon goes to work on a mast cell tumor, they want 3-centimeter margins. Well, if you think you have a lipoma, the margins aren't important. So if you haven't done your aspirate and you just say, oh, I'm going to take off a lipoma, and then you don't take very big borders around the mass, and then, whoops, it's a mast cell tumor, that dog is going to have another surgery, I'd be willing to bet, to get clean margins. So that's why it's always important to know what you're dealing with before you make that first surgical incision, because you can do such a much better job if you know up front that it's a mast cell.
Now, I have a question for you about when this situation happened to our dog, when we suspected they had some kind of tumor. The veterinarian told us that the tumor was too small to biopsy. It was very small. It was smaller than a pencil eraser. But at what point are they too small, and at what point do you just have to go in there and take it out right away to see what it is?
Keep in mind that the terminology is really complicated. So what I just described, where you take a needle and put into the tumor and suck some cells out, is actually a cytology. A biopsy, what you do on a piece of tissue that goes to a special laboratory and is processed a special way to look at under the microscope. So there's probably nothing that's too small to biopsy, because even if you have a really tiny little skin mass, you can just incise around it. It's definitely a challenge to do a cytology on some of these little ones, because you can't hold the dog still enough and you can't get the needle just barely into it to get some cells out of it. And that's why little ones are a bit of a challenge. You can always try, but you may not get anything back simply because it's just technically very difficult to do. If you have a mass that's less than, you can probably do 5 millimeters. I don't know. I'd say 1 or 2 millimeters would be hard. 5 is definitely doable.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that now.
And 5 millimeters is about 1/4 of an inch.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's a pretty good size.
So 5 millimeters is a little smaller than a pencil eraser, I'd say.
Yeah.
Just to put a number on it for our listeners.
Right. And so I was getting my terms confused, so thank you for clarifying that. So as far as diagnosis goes, once you've determined that it is mast cell, how is it graded and treated? What are the next steps if your dog does have that?
So the cytology tells us that we need to have 3-centimeter margins at surgery, and that's a critical piece for a good surgery to happen. Then whatever is removed surgically gets put in a special preservative solution and gets sent to a laboratory where it's processed. It takes a couple of days to process it, make it into a special microscope slide, stain it, and then have a pathologist look at it under the microscope and determine what it is. And that's why the biopsy doesn't come back for a few days or maybe a week, because of that whole process. Your veterinarian doesn't do that in their office. It gets sent out.
Mm-hmm.
So when the pathologist looks at it under the microscope, they're going to say that this is a grade 1, a grade 2, or grade 3 mast cell tumor. That's the classic grading system. Grade 1, almost all of those tumors are cured by surgery alone, and the dogs go on to live and be fine. Grade 3 mast cell tumors can be really bad, and they tend to spread everywhere, and they tend to come back after surgery and be very difficult to get clean margins on. Those are ones that the dog probably needs some follow-up chemotherapy. And then grade 2 mast cell tumors are the ones in the middle, and they are much tougher to predict. And sometimes we end up doing a lot of tests on that biopsy to try and give us a better handle on whether or not we think that tumor is likely to come back quickly or spread elsewhere in the body, because then if we think it's going to come back or spread, we may recommend chemo in those patients.
Wow. So with a 2 and a 3, what types of chemo would you recommend? Is it always the same, or does it differ?
There are some drugs that are accepted for treatment of mast cell tumors, and there's no one best protocol. So different people have different things that they like to use. One of the really common protocols would be almost all protocols are going to have prednisone in them. Because prednisone is specifically kills mast cells. Then a lot of people will use vinblastine, which is a traditional chemotherapy drug. Other people will use a drug called CCNU, or lomustine is its trade name. And no one has really looked to see if one is better than the other. Lomustine sometimes causes really low white blood cell counts, and vinblastine a little bit less so I kind of like it because the safety profile is maybe a titch better in vinblastine. But if I use CCNU, I would use prednisone with it as well. Then there are these new drugs for the treatment of mast cell disease. Every time there's a new drug, you have to figure out how to incorporate it into your protocol. And these new drugs are targeted therapies which attack a particular genetic mutation that's common in mast cell tumors, but not exclusively present in every mast cell tumor.
And is that kind of treatment available everywhere, or only some vets doing that?
No. Well, those drugs are available. Usually can buy them, but because they are expensive, most of the time your general vet doesn't have them because they don't see enough mast cell tumors to use up the bottle that they buy. So a lot of times that is something that you go to an oncologist for, even though your veterinarian could buy them that medication if they want it.
Got it. Okay. So we have a quick question for you. Getting back to the part about grading and different grades of mast cell, one of your favorite patients, Jill the cat, Erica Burse, wanted to ask you, why does mast cell cancer get graded but osteosarcoma does not?
There are some grading schemes for osteosarcoma. The point of grading tumors is to try and use that grade to predict the behavior of the tumor. So in osteosarcoma, one of the ways that the pathologists have used biopsies to predict behavior is that, and this happens has happened in some dog research projects and also in children with osteosarcoma, is they give those kids chemotherapy, and then they look to see how much of the tumor is dead on a second biopsy after chemo is given. And the more dead tumor, the better that child's prognosis is. And if enough of the tumor doesn't die from the chemotherapy, then they're going to switch protocols and do something different. So not every tumor is graded, but the grading is usually developed in response to predicting prognosis. And mast cell is the classic example of grading predicting prognosis, because if you remember, I said almost all grade 1s are cured by surgery alone, 2s in the middle, and 3 are usually carry a very bad prognosis with a high likelihood of recurrence and spread. So mast cell is one of the best grading systems. And that grading system was actually developed here at the Animal Medical Center and was first published in the middle 1980s. So the system has been around for a very long time.
Oh, wow. That is really cool. Now, getting back to the – thank you for answering the question, by the way. Getting back to the part about treatments and the different drugs being used, what are the types of treatments that might have the worst or the least side effects? Do some have more than others? Is there one that people might want to ask for? Or
the question that you as a pet owner want to ask your veterinarian when your pet is diagnosed with a mast cell tumor is, how do you typically recommend that this be treated? And then you listen to what your veterinarian says, and then you say, well, are there any alternatives? And then you listen to what they say. And they will say things like, in my hands, this protocol has more toxicity. In my hands, this is a more expensive treatment. This is what happens with this treatment. And so listen to what they say about the different alternative treatment options. For some patients, like, CCNU can be rough on the liver, and then in other dogs it's not. But if you had a dog with a liver problem, I would probably not be recommending CCNU for your dog. Sometimes you give a chemotherapy drug like vinblastine, and the dog doesn't tolerate it. It causes a lot of vomiting in that particular patient. And every drug is not predictable in each patient. So if I have a bad effect from a chemo drug, I'm going to say, this is really not going well. Do you think we should change to the alternative drug? So never go into treating a pet with cancer with, this is how we're going to do it, because you always have to look and see what the pet's other problems are. You have to look and see how that pet tolerates the treatment. And if it tolerates it well, terrific, keep going. If it's not tolerating the treatment, think about what the alternatives are.
That is really good to know, because I think a lot of pet parents, when they start dealing with this disease, they kind of freeze, and all they see is that, well, we have to do chemo and there's going to be side effects and it could be really bad. But I mean, what you're saying is that we need to be more flexible when we approach it and say, well, it could go either way, so why don't we just be open and see what happens?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
yes.
That kind of way it goes. Okay, great. There seems to be a lot of dogs, and I'm not including cats in this sentence because we just don't see any members with it, but it seems like they live with the disease for a long time, and, you know, they might be going back for some antihistamines, or a dog might be on Benadryl or prednisone for a long time because of it. Is this a disease that you just manage and live with, or does it ever go away?
Certainly, if you're a dog with a grade 1 mast cell tumor, then surgery is likely to make it go away. If you have a grade 3 mast cell tumor, or a mast cell tumor that's spread to a lymph node or somewhere else, then it's much harder to get that dog off of drugs. Possible, but it's more difficult.
Okay. And are there any complementary therapies that can help live with those drugs. So, for example, acupuncture or something like that. Do you typically recommend anything like that for your patients with mast cell?
So we usually, you know, if we're having side effects from a chemo drug, then we have all kinds of anti-nausea medications and things try and make the pet feel better. And certainly if we're having problems with side effects, another option is to decrease the dose to make the pet tolerate the drug better. I've used acupuncture some to think about controlling pain. Especially if I have a patient who needs to get prednisone and then has arthritis, and then you'd want to give some nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drug for the arthritis, except that those drugs crash into the prednisone and can cause really bad side effects when you give the two together. So I might use acupuncture to help deal with another problem like arthritis, but I don't know that we're quite there yet in knowing that acupuncture is going to help to control things like nausea in pets getting chemotherapy.
Okay. Okay, good to know. When I think about this disease, we see a lot of different dogs come to us with it. And are there specific breeds and ages or dog types that are at risk? Who tends to get this disease?
So dogs in the boxer family, so boxers, bulldogs, pugs, are definitely breeds at risk for mast cell disease. Maybe Labradors, the Golden Retrievers as well. I think Vizslas are on that list. So there are certain breeds at risk. The pug particularly, for pug listeners out there, pugs are really prone to developing multiple mast cell tumors over the course of their life. Sometimes they come in and have four or five at one time, and we take them off, and then they come back a year later, and they have four or five more again. So they're usually low-grade, and surgery fixes them. And it's not they form multiple tumors that we're not seeing metastatic or spreading lesions of the original tumor. So that's kind of a unique pug situation. Any dog that has had a mast cell tumor is probably a greater risk of getting another mast cell tumor, and so they need to be on bump watch for the rest of their life.
And what does that entail? Can you explain that to me?
Well, if I have a pet that only has no bumps on it, then it's very easy. I just say, if you get a new one, I need to see it, and we need to test it with a cytology. But sometimes I have dogs that have 10, 12 lipomas on them. It's really hard to tell them from a developing mast cell tumor. So we create a drawing, what we call a body map, of all the lumps that the dog has, and we measure them so that we can keep track of where they are in relationship to the other bumps. And then probably 3-4 times a year, the dog comes in and we go over that chart and we look for any changes in bumps or any new bumps on their skin. And sometimes the owners will have a copy of the chart and come in and they will have penciled in a new bump on their dog. And then we know exactly where to go to evaluate the new bump.
That is a great idea, and that's another reason to see your vet and your oncologist, if you're already dealing with it, to see them regularly to have these bumps looked at. Now, as far as any clinical studies that are going on with mast cells, is this a disease that tends to get studied a lot? Are there places that are doing trials to help?
There are probably multiple trials going on in the United States because mast cell tumors are the most common malignant skin tumor of the dog. So it's one ripe to be studied. And a good place to go to find out what studies are available would be to go to the Veterinary Cancer Society's website. Just Google Veterinary Cancer Society and then click on For Pet Owners, and under there will be a listing of clinical trials going on in the United States for all kinds of cancer, but that'd be a good place to look to find one on mast cell tumors that might be close to you.
Okay. Well, we'll include that website, Earl, in our forums post about this show. And Dr. Hoyhouse, I can't thank you enough. You are so helpful, and we really appreciate all of your time today. And we've learned a lot. Thank you.
Good. So happy to be here.
Yes, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Hanhaus. Listeners can learn more about your work at amcny.org and find more informative interviews, videos, and podcasts to help keep our three-legged pets happy and comfortable in the blogs and forums at tripods.com.
Until next time on Tripod Talk Radio, learn more about canine amputation recovery and find the best gear for three-legged dogs at tripods.com. Ha ha ha!